From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Rasha McChesney with the latest. A Juneau artist submitted a piece for this year's Wearable Arts Show that was entirely in Tlingit. But that entry was later disqualified from the judging process, without the artist knowing. Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Management, which puts on the show, says that there was a miscommunication and that there wasn't racism involved. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry spoke to Indigenous artists who say this is a common experience and raises questions of who gets to be heard in Juneau's arts community and who doesn't.
This year's Wearable Arts entries had many themes, from ecocentric climate awareness to the joys of Juneau to shrimp cocktails. Kachgun Rochelle Smallwood's piece stood out. That's Wearable Arts MC Richard Carter introducing the piece. Titled Yahin Awe Ya Kusti, it towered over the audience, standing more than 10 feet tall on the model Magdalena Kahlo. The title of Kachgun's piece, its description, and the music behind it are all in Tlingit. Her piece made an impression on the audience. Every year during Wearable Arts, professional judges come in and weigh each piece in its presentation. Then they pick their favorites. And Kachgun's piece got left out of that process. The Juneau Arts and Humanities Council Management, which puts on the show, says this was because of miscommunication and a time crunch. They made assumptions about whether Kachgun wanted her piece to be judged. The model who wore the piece, Kahlo, as well as other artists and models at the event, complained of racism and exclusion backstage. These complaints worked their way up the chain to Nancy DeCherney, the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council's executive director. The council apologized for the miscommunication, and its board members say they held two meetings to discuss those complaints. During those discussions, Juneau Arts Council staff determined that there wasn't racism involved in the decision to exclude Kachgun's piece from the judging process. But the model Kahlo disagrees.
And then for them to just be like, no, it wasn't racist, is just kind of like, okay, well, you don't get to decide that.
Kahlo says her experience during the weekend of Wearable Arts included microaggressions from other competitors and uncomfortable reactions to their piece being entirely in Tlingit. Kachgun wasn't able to attend the event in person, but Kahlo says that when she told event staff the piece would be entirely in Tlingit,
I like laughed about it like to my face.
The council's board president, Abel Ryan, who is Tsimshian, says the council was initially hesitant about the piece being in Tlingit. But to Kachgun, it was essential that none of the Tlingit she used for the piece be translated into English.
Also, Native artists don't have to explain their art or their indigeneity for people. We don't have to digest it for them. And I feel like a lot of times we're asked to like perform Native for consumption, and that we're expected to act a certain way and explain it a certain way, and I'm hoping to help change that narrative, and I'm also hoping to normalize getting the language back on the land.
But as Tlingit language revitalization efforts grow, language professor Hune Lance Twitchell says that the question to translate or not to translate is coming up more often. Translating Tlingit to English puts the burden on Tlingit speakers.
And, you know, maybe if you're not connected to someone in the language learning community, maybe it's time that you make that connection. That way you have someone you can ask, or hopefully it sparks some curiosity to just learn a few things.
He also says it's important to consider our expectations for art to be made for English speakers. That expectation can impact people whose languages have been violently suppressed.
And I understand that some people want to know and they feel excluded if they don't know. But then hopefully there's got to be ways, I think, for the communities to also sort of say, hey, this not everything has to be for everybody. But at the same time, it does get complicated at times because some people, I mean, we're dealing with languages that were specifically prohibited by an English-speaking population. And so there is just a weird dynamic when we say, hey, you need to translate this for the English-speaking population. That also came here and has nearly killed your language.
Ernestine Hayes, longtime Kagwantan community member, author, and poet, says she wasn't surprised to hear about Kachgoon's experience trying to make art in Juneau and display it during wearable arts. She says this is common for Indigenous artists and Tlingit people. They have to change everything about themselves to be considered acceptable or qualified. She brought up an incident from 2018 when a Japanese geisha-inspired costume at Wearable Arts prompted complaints about cultural appropriation and was later pulled from the lineup. Hayes says art is meant to challenge your perspective, to help you grow.
You know, you can do some research on art. If we see a painting that we don't understand or by an artist that we're not familiar with, we don't dismiss it and reject it immediately. We do some research. We talk to people. We ask questions, and then we appreciate it even more.
Going forward, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council management says they're considering removing the judging process from wearable arts. Kachgoon's piece is still in the running for this year's People's Choice Award, which has not been announced yet. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Krumrie.
And President Biden announced a ban on Russian oil imports this morning amid the country's continued attacks on Ukraine. The ban had bipartisan support from legislators, including Alaska's Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan. The ethos is to cripple Russia's economic power. Russia is one of the world's largest energy producers. KDL's Sabine Pooks reports on what that ban might mean for Alaska.
The west coast of the U.S. gets between 300,000 and 7 million barrels of oil from Russia every month, according to data from the Energy Information Administration. Not a lot of that supply heads to Alaska, though there is at least one facility in the state that's traditionally included Russian crude in its foreign imports, the Marathon Refinery in Kenai. That was until recently. Kara Moriarty, head of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, says the facility's not currently importing from Russia. It stopped shipping in crude from the country last year, though Moriarty says she's not exactly sure why.
I just know that at this time there are no Russian imports to Alaska that I'm aware of.
A spokesperson from Marathon Petroleum says the company doesn't comment on its crude sourcing, besides the fact that it processes, quote, mainly Alaska domestic crude along with limited international crude imports. Moriarty says refineries like the Kenai facility will make decisions about where they source imports based on demand and the type of crude they need. And she guesses those factors, not the current crisis in Ukraine, were to blame for the change.
Those circumstances change, you know, pretty fluidly. And so I don't have any, I don't know any rationale for recent, but I know that's been, you know, some of the rationale in the past.
Russian oil and gas have stayed immune from sanctions from the U.S. so far, though some large oil and gas companies have separately promised to stop importing oil and gas from the country. Moriarty says it's too soon to tell what a ban on Russian oil could mean for Alaska's own production.
Because no one knows for certain how long this conflict is going to last. No one knows the ramifications depending on how long it's going to last. Does this open up, you know, a market for us and for gas and North Slope gas? And, you know, again, it's just, I think it's just too soon to tell.
Marathon is the biggest U.S. importer of Russian crude, according to Energy News source Oil Price. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks. Oil Price. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
And checking in on the Iditarod, Aaron Burmeister has the early lead in the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Burmeister was the first musher Tuesday to check in to race officials in the village of Nikolai, which is 263 miles into the nearly 1,000-mile race. He was followed into the checkpoint about 30 minutes later by Ryan Reddington. Rounding out the top five so far are Richie Dial, Mitch Seavey, and defending champion Dallas Seavey. The race is in its early stages yet. A large chunk of the 49 musher field are behind the top five, all making their way to Nikolai. The race started Sunday in Willow, and the winner is expected sometime early next week in Nome. And Republican gubernatorial candidate Charlie Pierce has named his running mate in his bid to unseat Republican Governor Mike Dunleavy. The Kenai Peninsula borough mayor tapped Edie Grunwald to share his ticket and run as lieutenant governor. Grunwald is a retired Air Force colonel who lives in the Matanuska-Susitna borough. This will be her second gubernatorial race, having run as a Republican candidate for lieutenant governor in 2018. Her most recent public service has been to chair the Alaska Parole Board. In her appearance alongside Pierce, Grunwald said she wanted to purge ineligible voters from participating in elections. That is the latest from the KTOO Newsroom. I'm Rasha McChesney.